This is an Audio Wool original.
This episode of Fright Day is brought to you by Gates of Hell Chipotle Hot Sauce by Fright Day. Bold chipotle flavor blended with habanero peppers for just the right burn. Kissed with garlic and passion fruit. Zero human blood, like none at all. Visit shop.frightday.com before the first batch disappears.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. If you'd like to support us, go to patreon.com/frightday.
Fright Day, I'm your host, Byron, and I'm not really a math guy. I was lucky enough to sneak my way through pre-calculus in high school, but honestly, what was I going to do with all that advanced junk anyway? Be a data analyst? A statistician? Solve an esoteric equation that just might help me find out where my missing daughter is while also unlocking a gateway to hell? I'm a podcaster. And that means my job is to talk about that tonight as we review Brandon Muldowney's The Cellar. I'm joined tonight by Kelly.
Hello!
And Sam can't make it because he's pitching a viral hashtag.
What?
I mean, it's a deep poll, but we'll talk about it. Kelly, did you by chance get to, real quick, did you say hi to our new neighbor yet?
New neighbor.
Yeah. Does David Parker Ray ring a bell?
No, but what? I bet it's a serial killer.
What about the toy box killer?
Yep, there we go. I knew it.
So although no bodies were found, David Parker Ray was accused by his accomplices of killing several people and suspected by police and FBI to have murdered as many as 60 in the town of Truth or Consequences, New Mexico.
Isn't that a movie?
I believe Truth or Consequences is a movie.
Truth or Consequences, New Mexico.
Feature film.
A Kiefer Sutherland film.
He tortured and presumably killed them in a $100,000 homemade torture chamber he called his toy box, which was full of whips, chains, pulleys, straps, clamps, legs, spreader bars, and surgical blades and saws. You know, inside of this torture room, along with numerous sex toys, torture implements, syringes, and detailed diagrams made by himself showing different methods and techniques for inflicting pain. Kelly, he's not our new neighbor. He died in 2002 in prison. However...
Oh, he was buried here?
No, he buried some fucking place no one cares about. I did mention accomplices, didn't I?
Mm-hmm. We have received numerous messages asking about Cynthia Hendy, a convicted accomplice to serial toy box killer David Parker Ray. Hendy now lives in Hamilton after serving 18 years in New Mexico for her involvement.
Sydney Hendy moved to Hamilton a month or so ago.
I was going to guess Bitterit. Yeah.
Yep, folks not from around here, that's like 45 minutes south of where I am and less than that for Kelly.
Closer to me.
She moved here after serving 18 years in New Mexico for her involvement. Her stated role consisted of helping David track down victims, watching as he brutalized them, and occasionally helping with the torture. So everything came crashing down in March of 1999 when a woman named Cynthia Vigil escaped by stabbing Cindy in the neck with an ice pick. And Cynthia ran away naked, wearing only an iron slave collar and padlocked chains, which is absolutely horrifying.
Yeah.
David was at work at the time. But yeah, it's safe to say that locals are freaking out a little bit, especially since she lives near a school.
Circulating on social media platforms, Hamilton community members expressed frustration and worry about having Hendy live close to a local school. In Montana, offenders can register as sexual or violent offenders, or both. When registering, there are multiple tiers in which they fall into based on what their sentencing judge assigns them as. Think of it as a scale. Offenders at the bottom of the scale do not have limits on where they can live and who they can interact with, but offenders at the top must follow certain laws with these restrictions. If the crime does not occur in Montana, but the convicted offender moves to the state, Montana law can adopt the level assigned by the sentencing judge. In this case, Hendy is here at the bottom of the scale. Therefore, there is no law prohibiting where she can live. Ravalli County Sheriff Steve Holton confirms to MTN News that Hendy is registered and has been in compliance since her move to Montana. Sheriff Holton says that there are other violent and sexual offenders who live in western Montana, and there are resources out there to look up offenders in your neighborhood.
I mean, it just seems interesting that she feels safe enough, because if I were in Hamilton or anywhere in the Bitterroot Valley of Montana, and I knew that my neighbors didn't want me there, I would be terrified.
It's not the most welcoming... Well, maybe no. maybe welcoming for those types of folks. I don't know. But
yeah, I guess that is a good point.
I don't know. I don't live there, Kelly. You live closer. You would have a better description of this.
Well, yeah, I mean, they went batshit protesting the...
The trucker situation, and I mean...
And Syrian immigrants coming in, and like, they're just... They're...
Separatists. They're rather extreme. Let's just go with that.
Any number of militias could go sideways at any moment down there.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, if David Parker Ray and Cindy were killing children, things would be different. But
true.
Since it's just regular old sex workers, I don't know, maybe Hamilton is a safer place for her. You don't get to really be left alone once you've been an accomplice to a serial killer.
No.
I hesitate to say, I'm curious to know what happens.
How about just say, we'll be watching.
We'll be watching, Cindy. You fucking freak.
Yeah.
Got my eye on you.
Made some bad choices, Cindy.
Yeah, that was rough. You know what, though? Are we hiring?
Perhaps.
Because these DVD copies of Far From Heaven aren't going to put themselves away.
I feel like that's just your job, so get back to work.
It's time for staff picks.
They say so much, but they never tell you if it's any good.
T's mom in it?
The Howling Horror, straight ahead.
What you got this week?
I have two. Can I have two?
Yeah, why not? I have got two as well, actually.
Oh, interesting. All right, so you kind of hinted at it at the top of the show, but our feature this week was definitely math horror.
Math horror.
And so, of course, I wanted to find...
Murder by
two
Numbers?
Other... Nope.
No.
I wanted to find one other math horror movie, but I found two because... One of them involves something that I may not be able to watch because it sounds very much Kelly triggering.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like it was probably hypocritical to recommend a movie that was most likely going to be Kelly triggering. So let's get that one out of the way first. It also involves a fairly bad guy as the author, but he's written some interesting stories. So trying to separate the man from his stories, H.P. Lovecraft's short story, Dreams in the Witch House, was turned into a movie.
This house is infested with rats. I can hear them in the walls.
Hey, you put them up to this, Mazurowitz? Huh? Is this more of your nonsense?
You saw it, the rat. With a face.
Well, there.
A human face.
That was a dream.
No dream.
You put the idea in my mind. I went to sleep and I dreamt about it.
She is coming for you.
Who are you talking about?
The witch. Take this.
No thanks. It was just a dream.
No dream. This house is evil.
Sigh.
Your soul is in peril.
I believe it was actually... Masters of Horror, so I know those are like half movies, half episodes. You could kind of debate. It's an hour long.
Okay.
Directed by Stuart Gordon, actually.
Oh.
In 2005. Written by Mick Garris.
Rest in peace.
Yeah. Interesting story about a mathematician, a graduate student mathematician, to be exact, who is renting a room in a boarding house, and there is a 17th century witch who's haunting the place.
Hmm.
He's also got some neighbors, a woman and her baby, who are being terrorized. As you might imagine, stuff involving the baby sounds like it could be fairly triggering. It's supposed to be pretty interesting. I like the 55 to 60 minute horror niche. It's more than a short, but less than a full movie.
Sure.
I'm a big fan.
Well, I mean, as Pete Davidson would say, you like a short-ass movie.
And that's a short-ass movie. A really short movie, like at most an hour 40. Give me that short-ass movie.
I've maybe watched two SNL skits with Pete Davidson. Mostly I just know him as the guy that Kanye is probably going to kill and the guy who has a lot of tattoos.
He's getting those tattoos removed, and Kanye's looking for a behavioral therapist.
I think Kanye needs something a hell of a lot more serious than a behavioral therapist. But
Pete Davidson did a musical song.
Oh, I love a musical song.
Oh, yeah, as opposed to the atonal instrumentless arrangements. Shut up is what I'm saying, Kelly. Don't be mean to me, okay? I just had to do tech support with you for like 45 minutes.
Okay, that was
not
me. You know goddamn well that wasn't me.
No, your phone was broken and we're still remote because your dang husband is recovering. Get well soon, Sam. But also with you having just recently watched Alien Autopsy Fact or Fiction, which is certainly less than an hour, I could see why you might be enjoying these 45 minutes to an hour long programs, you know?
It's just really good for my attention span.
Yeah,
but,
I get it.
So this is a fun one. There's a fun t-shirt in it too. The guy's apparently attending Miskatonic University, which is obviously a reference to H.P. Lovecraft. We had a Miskatonic University shirt for Creature shortly after she was born. And then my second flick is one that I am actually potentially going to watch tonight, depending on whether I can stay awake long enough. But there is at least I think, a super fun looking flick called The Traveling Salesman.
I want to express to you the level of gratitude that the president and the country owe you. This is no small moment in history.
What you're describing is a hacking algorithm on a scale like nothing ever earthly devised. An entire dimension has been controlled. You can't lock it away.
This is the future of the world. This is now.
I don't know anything about the traveling salesman.
Don't think it has a the. I think it's just traveling salesman.
Traveling salesman. Okay. Don't know anything about that.
Four mathematicians are hired by the U.S. government to solve the most powerful problem in computer science history. Now, unfortunately, the guy who directed this doesn't appear to have done much since then. But, you know, there's still time. Came out in 2012. Showed up on a lot of lists as well-done, math-adjacent film. I don't know that it technically qualifies as horror, but it seems like it could be pretty darn close. And I believe that it's based on an actual computer science problem, which I'm sure somebody who's listening will be able to talk to us about.
Yeah, we got smart listeners.
We have really smart listeners, so much smarter than the average show. But it's a very complex programming question that I don't understand. I mean, there's a lot of sigma notation in it, which I kind of understand. We've got some interesting sequence looking things, maybe some vectors in there. Not really sure. But if you look it up on Wikipedia, you can see some simulations of it, different evaluations, algorithms. Super fun, but it all revolves.
Oh my God.
Okay, but this is my shit. And it has to do with Euclidean geometry, which I really like as well.
No.
I don't understand it. Definitely don't understand it. But I understand like the initial bits of it. So I'm going to watch it.
Okay.
And I'll let you know how it is. It seems positively fascinating, though, this movie.
Well, I got two films that I haven't seen either. We're doing some blind staff picks this week. I was going to start with a Wes Craven film that I've never seen from 1991.
How is there a Wes Craven film you haven't seen? That's shocking.
From 1991. Please don't get mad at me, folks. I've never seen The People Under the Stairs.
Something's in there.
But we gotta get out of here, Leroy.
All sorts of rumors about what goes on in that house. The police never took it serious.
She's been feeding that thing between the walls again.
Very, very tense about this.
What goes on in this house is a sin. But what goes on under the stairs is a nightmare.
Oh my God.
Have you seen that?
Yes, even I've seen that.
Is it worth watching? Is it too silly? It's listed as a horror comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah?
No, you should watch it.
Well, it's got this guy named Fool who breaks into a home of his family's greedy and uncaring landlords. He discovers a disturbing scenario where incestuous adult siblings have mutilated a number of boys and kept them imprisoned under stairs in their large creepy house. Sounds interesting, Kelly, but it's not my number one pick.
Wait, so hold on. It is one of your two picks, but it's not your number one?
Not my number one.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's exactly what I'm saying.
All right.
My actual staff pick is Don't Look in the Basement.
Don't. Don't look in the basement. The line between sanity and madness can be crossed in a single step. And with this step, you enter the nightmare world of terror. On the day the insane took over the asylum.
Okay.
Also known as The Forgotten and Death Ward number 13, Nurse Charlotte Beale is hired by Dr. Stevens to work at a small sanitarium he runs. A small one. A boutique sanitarium. When Charlotte arrives, however, she...
I'm going to go to a boutique sanitarium.
Well, yeah, it's the only way to do it. She learns that Stevens has died in the interim and that she'll be taking orders from a new president, Dr. Masters. Charlotte goes along, but can't help but notice how unusual Masters' approach to the treating of the mentally ill is. They're allowed to run free all over the place, and Charlotte begins to wonder if Masters isn't a patient herself. Directed by this person named S.F. Brownrigg.
It's a fun name.
Yeah, not terribly prolific, but still carved a name for himself out in the 70s. This was his first feature, followed by Scum of the Earth, a.k.a. Poor White Trash Part 2.
Was there a part one?
I don't think so. The Michigan Daily called it, quote, the worst movie of all time.
Ooh.
He did die in 1997, but... A sequel titled Don't Look in the Basement 2 was announced, directed by Anthony Brownrigg, the son of S.F. Brownrigg. The film was shot in Texas in April of 2014 and used several locations from the original film. And it came out in 2015, which is kind of a nice little story. Might need to check that one out as well, but I'm not sure. I think I actually might just lean back into the people under the stairs because some reviews call this film unnecessarily nasty, hard to swallow, and a grade Z horror flick.
Ooh.
Yeah, I played the trailer probably just a second ago. It's so weird. It starts out by saying, the makers of the last house on the left
warn you again. To avoid fainting, keep repeating, it's only a movie.
It's only a movie. It's only a movie. It's a movie. You know,
Oh, yeah. You've tried to use that before. Yeah.
I use it all the time on my promotional cards for the podcast.
I know. I didn't want to call that much attention to it. I feel like it could be a copyright violation. I was just trying to cover your ass, Byron.
Well,
Jesus.
If ours is, then we got to point them in the direction of Don't Look in the Basement, because I went through the entire crew and no one, not like a gaffer, even worked on Last House on the Left. I don't know if it's the
way... What the hell is the connection?
I don't know. Yeah. Maybe it's the way that they're phrasing it. The makers of Last House on the Left warn you again to avoid fainting. Keep repeating. So I don't know what they're going for here.
Maybe they watched it and reviewed it and said that?
I have no idea, but I guess check out Don't Look in the Basement, I suppose.
So confusing.
Yeah, what a day, huh?
Whew.
But before we lock up for the night, let's take a peek in the back room, because it's time. I'd like to welcome and initiate some new members into the Friday Society.
So have we turned the back room into like a, I don't know, some type of an occult ritual den? Like, do we have a pentagram on the floor and stuff like that?
Maybe some Hebrew glyphs.
Oh, now you're directly referencing the movie.
We're gonna get into that. It's all next to the mop bucket and the stock of Act 2 movie theater butter popcorn that we're selling at the counter as well.
Nope, Quinn's. Selling Quinn's.
What is Quinn's? Tell me what that is.
It's the one that I've made for you before.
Like, I'm going to remember some fancy, weird microwave popcorn that you like?
Yeah, it's the only one that doesn't have, like, death stuff in it when you pop it.
All right, get the sponsorship. Turn the music back on.
Ugh.
Caitlin O. I'd like to welcome and initiate you to the Friday Society. I need you to find out why, when I bonked my head in Austin, it didn't make me a math savant.
Hi, Caitlin. Welcome.
Why'd you yell it?
I don't know. I was just excited about it.
Well.
Don't worry about Byron's head injury. It's his own damn problem. But if you could tell me how to keep my cherry trees alive.
It's freezing cold in Montana right now. We got a storm snuck up on us. We got the next, like, 4 days of me running in the snow, but...
Ugh.
Shadow Pixel, you know that name, we've said it before, bumped up their support and joined the Inner Circle.
Welcome aboard, Shadow Pixel.
I actually sent out a letter to the FDSIC folks this weekend. Keep your eyes on your mailbox. It talks a little bit about our upcoming schedule, some projects we're working on, and I've included some pictures of secret things in there.
Do I know what the secret things are? What are the secret things?
It's just...
Oh, you know what? Before I forget it, Byron, I'm going to send you an audio clip that I recorded in the supposedly haunted basement of Mount Vernon.
Okay. What am I going to use that?
Because, well, you're going to analyze it for EVPs, obviously.
Okay, well, I guess we can do this another time, Kelly, but...
Sorry. It's just while we were thinking, because I felt like that was something to share with the patrons, and I was like, oh, I need to get this to Byron so we have something to share with the patrons. Well, so
we'll save it for a True Tales episode, Kelly.
Ooh.
Caitlin, Shadow Pixel, thank you guys. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you want to be like them, go to cult.frightday.com where you get access to so much stuff. Behind the Screams, the weekly show, Behind the Show, and so much more. So when I was at South by Southwest, I watched this movie, and I knew immediately that, well, even though I have some different feelings, that this would be a Kelly film.
Well, okay. Can you qualify that a little bit?
I imagine we'll get into it in a second as we review, ow, I hit my elbow, The Cellar.
Hope you're enjoying your visit here this evening. Now, on with the show.
Don't hit your head.
I won't. The Cellar is a 2002 Irish supernatural horror film written and directed by Brendan. I probably said Brandon earlier. Brendan Muldowney. Brendan Muldowney. After her daughter mysteriously vanishes in the cellar.
I don't know, if he's Irish.
Muldowney?
If he's Irish, I would probably go with Muldowney.
Muldowney. Written and directed by Brendan Muldowney.
Or Muldowney.
Yeah, I'm going to fucking kill you, I swear to God. I really will. After her daughter mysteriously vanishes in the cellar of their sinister new home, Kira becomes obsessed with uncovering its dark secrets. What she discovers may put her entire family at risk of falling into the darkness forever.
Hmm.
I would become obsessed with whatever reason my daughter went missing.
You'd have to be pretty bad not to.
Brendan Muldowney. So after graduating from the National Film School, he wrote and directed 9 award-winning shorts. The Blind Lemming Story, Retribution in the Year 2050, The Message, Innocence, which I believe was the first time he got some attention. The Honorable Scaffolder, which I love.
The Honorable Scaffolder? I haven't seen that.
I just like the name. Oh. Never seen it.
Oh, okay. I thought...
Church of Acceptance, Beauty Queen, The 10 Steps, which is kind of interesting. It won Best Short at Sitges Film Festival in 2004. And I believe this film was loosely based on it. I read part of an interview where he mentioned that he tried to adapt it from that, but ended up switching things a little bit.
Oh, okay.
And Final Journey. His first feature film was called Savage, which is an exploration of masculinity and violence. It was nominated for 6 Irish Film and TV Awards, including the IFTA Rising Star Award. His second film, Love Eternal, in 2013, apparently played 80 film festivals worldwide and got the Dublin Critics Circle Award for Best Irish Film in 2014 at the Dublin Film Festival. In 2017, a film starring Tom Holland and John Barenthal, he directed it. It's called Pilgrimage, and it premiered at Tribeca Film Festival.
There is a great war being fought all around us.
You vowed to protect us.
A wise man would do well to prove his loyalty.
But he is just a mute. A half-wit.
He is not a half-wit.
Of all of the stuff we talked about, I haven't seen any of it. Have you?
Okay. Well, no, but more importantly, our lead is played by Elijah Cuthbert, and we can talk about her going all the way back to The Girl Next Door.
No, we can go before that, actually. She made her first television appearance as an extra in the Canadian horror-themed series Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Oh, I didn't know that. That's really fun.
That's kind of fun.
She also was one of the American girls that the hilarious, bumbling British fellow stumbles into a sleepover with in Love Actually.
Okay, and I guess horror attached, she was Carly in House of Wax, which is a pretty underrated little film. I enjoyed it.
The first place that I knew her consistently was as Jack Bauer's daughter in 24.
Yeah, that makes sense. She's kind of fallen off.
Yeah, I haven't seen her in a very long time, although it looks like she was in The Ranch, which I never watched, so that's why I didn't know about that. But
Ashton Kutcher, Danny Masterson program on Netflix that I believe Masterson got kicked out of because he's a rapist and a Scientologist.
Wasn't Sam Elliott on it, too?
I think that's right, and he's not being the best with his mouth lately.
He did apologize. It made me feel a little bit better, at least. But yeah. Anyhow,
it's good to see her. Welcome back.
It was another one of those moments where, like, oh, she's playing the mom of a teenager.
I was going to ask you that. That's interesting. I mean, you're a mother. How's it feel to start seeing these people who represented, like, they were teen movie stars, and now they come back as parents?
Yeah,
like Aubrey Plaza in Child's Play. That was a little premature, but Gillian Jacobs in whatever that bad horror film was that she was in.
Yeah, I'm honestly pretty used to it now. I'm okay. Yeah. Whatevs. I'm rolling with it.
Embrace it.
Yeah, I'm embracing it. But this movie had such a cool premise. This cool, giant Irish house that this family moves into.
New home, angsty teen.
Very angsty, but like angsty with an Irish accent, which is so much cooler than normal angsty.
But the mom is American.
She is American.
They never really touch on that, do they?
Well, the mom and the dad are advertising marketing execs.
Even on their first day at the new place, they leave to work late, which is, I guess...
Well, I think they own their own business and they're like a marketing... That's the way I understand it, at least. And trying to make things work. They've moved out into this beautiful house, but obviously removed from the city. The kids are pissed about it, especially... Mm-hmm. Daughter Ellie, she's really pissed about it.
It's obviously that Ellie is like a counterculture style child. You know, her mom, her entire business is like cool young people, right? Like she talks about how they're manufacturing this vlogger character named Sophie who lives a jet set lifestyle, and teenage girls respond well to aspirational marketing and social competition. So she comes up with this idea for something called natural selection, which is like a social media contest where whoever gets the most likes wins, which is like
gross.
It's gross, but also it's very surface level if you're talking about this type of marketing, I think. This is just, I guess, example one of my frustration with the director. He says a lot of stuff and acts like it's more valuable than it is.
But I feel like that was part of the plot line, too, was this was part of the rift between the mother and daughter, because I don't know that the parents were stupid, but they knew that kind of low-hanging fruit in terms of marketing seemed to be their sweet spot.
It just seemed it seemed kind of cheesy, and maybe like they didn't really fully understand the job that they were trying to portray. Like the mom's like looking at an ad and pauses and says, like, did you change the color of her bracelet? It's like, change it back. Like that's this big like,
oh, it is though. It okay, just
I recognize that that's important, but at the same time I feel like that's not the main part of their job, that they're talking about very superficial elements of this job.
I agree. And that the whole thing surrounding their job and their business, I don't think was really of much value, other than if you can just ignore most of it and understand it as another thing that pitted her against her teenage daughter.
Yeah, it's a rift. And I recognize the purpose of it. It's just, I feel like they shouldn't have spent so much time on it if it wasn't going to be addressed. Oliver, I need you not to shake that toy right now.
You're right. They should have spent more time on the math, because the math was the really cool shit.
We'll talk about that. Oliver, come here, bud. There's this toy. Okay. Ellie is the daughter, and she's got a younger brother named Stephen. And while the parents are away, Stephen won't behave. He puts on a spooky ram skull that he found in a closet,
which is actually kind of fun,
kind of cool. And he says that
spooky, a friend, legit spooky.
A friend at school told him that the house was owned by a witch who made a pact with the devil. So I'm getting the idea that they aren't moving to like a new city. They're just moving to a new house. Is that right?
Oh, good question. I thought that they were moving somewhere that was fairly isolated and away from friends.
Well, but why is he? I mean, this is their first day there. Why is Stephen already talking to someone at school, you know?
I think probably because he's a younger kid and he adjusted more easily than the teenager.
I guess. Yeah, maybe. They also found an old phonograph.
Yep, it is.
In the closet, yep. And it spoke a different language and started counting down. Oh, counting up.
And it reminded me a little bit of the number stations that we've reported on before.
Oh, it did kind of sound like that. But then suddenly, parents are still out, and they lose power in the house. So Ellie calls her mom for help, but the mom is obviously too busy to leave work. So she talks Ellie through checking the breaker box, which is in the cellar. Ellie's got a candle. She's scared, and after some guilt tripping, mom gives her the advice to help calm her down. She says there's 10 steps to the bottom. Count them as you descend. And that's what Ellie does. However, my God, another one?
Can you give me that toy?
He's got two of these identical Yeti dolls that he shakes. I got I got him another one because he ripped one and I wanted to repair it. It's his favorite. And he just pulled out the other one. So now I've got two on my desk. All right.
Oliver. She doesn't stop at 10. And no. That's so scary.
All right. And I like this scene. And this is kind of cool. I wonder if this was part of the short. Kind of in a trance, vocally, she continues counting and... I did like the shot of the mom driving home while the counting is still going on over the phone.
Yeah.
It's cool. And when the folks arrive home, she's missing.
She's completely gone. The police start investigating. They find on her accounts, her social media accounts, that she was being bullied. So everybody's believing that she ran away. But mom keeps saying, no, she didn't. I know she didn't run away. That's not what's going on here. And we, of course, know that's not what's going on here because she disappeared into the basement.
What do you think about Detective... Whoa. Oh, mailman this late? Huh.
What in the... That mailman is a serial killer. There is no reason there would be a mailman at your house this late.
I agree.
You be careful.
Detective Brophy. Brophy? Played by Andrew Bennett.
Bro.
What do you think about him?
Meh.
Yeah, he's fine. He's about as meh as the little kid, Steven.
Oh,
is.
I didn't mind the little kid. Steve I thought sucked. He was nice.
Steve was not great.
God, you are just being really mean about this whole show.
I apologize. I'll try to have a more positive attitude. Mom starts investigating the cellar. She finds these Roman numerals etched into the front of each step, and there's this strange equation at the base. She also has a very large black light that she uses. And she spins around after discovering the equation to see that there's a bunch of spooky faces painted on the wall with plant-based paint that dates back to the 60s, they determine.
Yeah, but that scene, oh my God, I loved that scene. Just these ghoul faces all over the walls down there. It was so fucking cool. I loved that.
It doesn't really make sense beyond being a kind of a cool set piece. The whole basement is fun.
Like, it's spooky.
But the police don't seem to be too concerned, and no one really is, even though it's like some weird invisible painting on a wall of weird demon faces. But that night, Stephen wets the bed. Kira couldn't sleep, so she stayed up. She discovered all these symbols above their doorways in the house, which pretty interesting. She takes pictures of them and... I thought this was ridiculous. Takes them. I'm sorry. I let me be nice after this moment.
Okay.
She takes the pictures of these symbols above her doorways and sends them to her assistant, I believe, to find out which font or language they are.
Oh, that bugged you, didn't it?
Well,
did that send you over the edge, Byron?
I almost broke my fucking computer because like I had to rewatch this. I watched this at South by Southwest and I just rewatched this before the show. Just like writing a script, that doesn't make any sense. I don't care when people use the word font or typeface, whatever. I'm slightly pretentious about that. But when you're talking about a different language above a door frame, why would you say font?
Well, okay, so here's what I'm going to give you for that. I suppose, especially as an advertising professional.
Maybe you're right.
You probably... Oh, no, I was agreeing with you. I think as an advertising professional, you probably would know better.
You might, but yeah, the folks at the office, they like the pitch, and the company that's agreeing to work with them went viral with a similar pitch last year, hashtag follow your heart.
Hashtag.
It's just another example of like when they should have just said nothing and it would have been more effective. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. Okay, fine. I know what you're saying there. But here's the thing. The premise was so interesting. The math was really cool.
Are you speeding through this because you have dinner right now?
Well, no, I'm speeding through it because I don't want you to ruin it for me. And you're talking me out of liking it.
Okay. And well, let's hold tight. This font, Kelly, is just Hebrew. They're Hebrew glyphs. I don't have a lot of experience with Jewish culture, but I could certainly recognize a Hebrew glyph.
Yeah, I mean, you have a very unique exposure to glyphs, though.
I guess that's probably true. But
thanks to me.
Oh, I'm not done. God, I still get to be upset. So when the assistant steps in and is like, hey, it's Hebrew. It's Hebrew glyphs. I put them in a certain order and it's spelt Leviathan. It's five Hebrew glyphs that she doesn't know what they mean, but when they're put in a certain order, it spells Leviathan, which is a sea creature in Jewish mythology. How is she like really good at Wordle?
No, I am so good at Wordle. By the way, speaking of math and Wordle, did you know that there's a math version of Wordle?
Numbral? Numeral.
Oodle.
Numeral
Oodle.
Would have been Oodle. Way better. Okay.
Oodle. I know. It's
is this
Oodle.
A fucking comedy? How does someone rearrange five letters randomly that they don't know what they represent and then come up with the word?
Well, because the picture that they made when she rearranged them was able to tell her that it meant Leviathan. She just looked it up.
Yeah, but you've got five random letters. Do you know how many possibilities there are?
Five random letters, 5 × 4 × 3 × 2 × 1 × 5 × 4 = 20, 60.
So what are the odds that this assistant...
120. 120 options for five letters.
Yeah. Is this a comedy, Kelly?
If you can't repeat letters. If you can repeat letters, it's more.
Steven is the worst actor. God, I did write too many mean things. I'm going to take that one back. Mom goes home. I take it back. I don't care about that. Mom goes home, plays the record again, and this causes Steven to trance out and start counting. It's kind of a cool scene.
So here's something that bugged me as a mom.
Yeah.
I felt like with all the madness going on, especially after she sees Steven trance out and start walking towards the cellar, from that point forward in the movie, you would imagine.
You should be on her hip.
Yes. Like, you don't let that kid out of your sight, especially when you put on the fucking record player again.
Yeah, what are you doing? She seemed.
And that
she
part was, I didn't like.
Well, she.
She was a traumatized mother.
But she also
was worried
left
about
him
her
at
kid.
School late twice. She was late for picking him up twice.
Yeah. I think maybe that was hinting at what a discombobulated mother she was.
Well, obviously, but it was still.
But you know,
shitty.
When she made it up to them, she made it up to them in the third act.
Okay, well, we won't get to that actually.
No, we're not. I'm going to ignore.
What do you think about the abacus during the counting scene, though? I thought that was actually a really cool visual
Love it.
I like that.
Yep. See, there were some really interesting devices used in this that make me think this director knows what he's doing.
Oh.
And just needs a third act. Like, we need to erase the third act from this movie.
No.
Reshoot.
No, no.
Rewrite, no. Reshoot.
What do you think about doing your own research? Because that keeps happening. While the mom does that, spooky winds and flickering happen, and this presence comes out of the basement as the score kind of chants. And I did kind of like the score. It had one of those, like...
It was a fun score.
The power goes out, and the voice of Steven comes from the locked basement. The cellar. When mom peeks through the keyhole, a monstrous eye jump scare happens. And then Steven comes from behind, saying he fell asleep in the playroom. You know, it's just, it's such a confusing sequence, really, that, I get it. I guess I understand why it exists. I just, it didn't really say anything that hadn't already been said, other than, I guess, introducing, like, a physical monster, I suppose.
Here's a weird thing.
What you got?
And I don't know if it's okay to I don't know how much we're going to spoil there.
I really don't care at this point. It's going to...
So we're not going to talk about the third act, but I will say... The day I watched this movie last week, I stumbled upon, I think I sent them to you, Byron, some really hilarious, definite copyright violation Lisa Frank occult backpacks.
Yeah, you did.
And one of them actually has Baphomet on it.
And I'm cool with Baphomet. I like Baphomet.
I mean, and I was explaining to my sisters what Baphomet is because neither of them knew. And then literally that night, I watched this movie. I was like, okay, that's weird.
That's kind of weird.
It doesn't just come up all the time. That's not just like normal process of life does not bring up Baphomet twice in one day.
Well, you're just running in the wrong circles, Kelly.
Apparently.
The next sequence, I guess, series of sequence, I thought was really interesting as well. So the mom goes into the cellar with the key and gets locked in herself after, I guess, knowing that a monster pretending to be her son was in there. She drops her phone, which she was using as a flashlight, and it falls into darkness, and you can't hear it hit the ground, implying that there's more beyond the steps. Than
she's cracked the door again.
Which is kind of cool, but I also feel like this is kind of just padding the runtime a little bit, because this whole sequence has lasted quite long. Yeah, we, at this point, have discovered that whatever's down there growls like a monster.
And has heavy breathing.
Yes. I don't know in what way we discovered that this previous family went missing. Was this a phone call? Was this an internet search?
No, she goes and talks to the mathematician at the university.
Yeah. Well, okay, why did I write this? It's time to visit the National College of Mathematics.
I love mathematics.
I know you do, and you love Dr. Fornet, right? The guy who bonked his head in a car crash and... It turned on parts of your brain that you don't normally use. Which
that happens sometimes.
Well, when you say parts of your brain you don't normally use, that's an incorrect statement.
Correct. We use all of our brain.
Yeah. But this guy, fun character, eccentric, graphic tee-wearing young doctor who, like I said, bonked his head and now he's smart.
Okay.
It's interesting. He's very good at visualizing complex equations and their patterns. Like when she comes into the office, he's spray painting a visual model of some bullshit. I don't know. He does an explanation of the Schrodinger's cat. What is the situation? What would you say? Theory?
It's an illustration of a concept in physics, okay. I guess. Physics, math.
Which is, I mean, it's also a pretty common one that I don't feel like necessarily needs to be explained, but was used as something that held a lot of weight, I guess. Which, I mean, it makes sense because the daughter is kind of like Schrodinger's cat at this point because no one knows where she is, so she is both alive and dead at the same time.
Yes.
But,
until they find her.
Well, he quickly... at looking at this equation determines that it represents different dimensions.
Well, that isn't necessarily...
Word for word, I used quotations.
No. I'm saying that it isn't crazy that he would understand that it represented that. Also, just a side note, have you ever heard of a gentleman named Derek Amato? Because after a severe concussion, he woke up with the ability to play the piano like a genius.
Now, that sounds like a scam. It seems like a hoax.
No, it's not a hoax.
Seems like a hoax, but that's interesting. I mean...
After suffering a head injury as a toddler, Alonzo Clemens began to spontaneously sculpt animals with incredible accuracy and speed.
Byron McCoy.
You should see his sculptures.
After smashing his head in Austin, Texas.
You're really good at podcast editing.
That's kind of true. It takes me a long time. Thousands of hours, Kelly. Kira leaves the National College of Mathematics, having made this new friend... And she arrives home after, I guess, stopping by the Verizon store or something to get a new cell phone. She gets a call from Fornet, who says that he tried to call her several times. She says that, oh, I was getting a new phone. I didn't hear it. But he says that he got through, but only heard counting on the other end. There's most certainly cell signal wherever the phone is, Kelly.
Okay, well, the laws of rationality don't apply to
this
bottom
film.
The stairs.
Great. The formula is actually an unfinished incantation, and Kelly, I quit the show. This is stupid. That's not what equations are.
Okay. This movie was really cool
until
the third act, and then it just got shit. And we're going to ignore it. We're going to pretend like the third act didn't happen, okay?
But what about this? How far are we backing up? Like, it's pretending to know what math is. This is ridiculous.
I mean, the math in it wasn't wrong. It was just a specific, I don't know, think about it like a physics equation to open a wormhole.
I don't know what that would look like, but I don't think it's...
Well, nobody knows what that would look like. It's theoretical physics. That's the beauty of it, Byron.
Okay, so this guy just like knows what this theoretical equation represents, and it doesn't represent...
Just suspend disbelief for a hot minute.
Well,
it's a freaking...
If it would have done it...
Baphomet, an endless set of stairs...
So what it was doing, though, was mixing
an old
so
haunted
many
Irish
things.
House.
Why are there Roman numerals plus this mathematical equation and Hebrew glyphs? Like, what are we doing? There's no consistency at all.
Okay. You know what?
What?
I'm just earmuffing you at this point because I liked this and I'm not letting you talk me out of it.
I want to talk about one more scene and then we can and then we can move on, okay? The dad gets in on doing his own research and I really, really like this scene. He makes,
because he doesn't believe her to begin with. He thinks she's crazy.
Yeah, well, she's acting fucking nuts. Let's be honest.
It's almost like Brandon wrote that character. I don't know. All right,
calm down. I mean, she does briefly meet Rose, the sole survivor of the last residence, because you find out that everyone in the house went missing before.
Remarkably unhelpful,
yeah,
I felt like.
Yeah, really, really kind of quick scene that was pretty unnecessary. It just says that one of the seven faces of hell, I think. Leviathan. That's not his name. My father brought it into this world. I guess we get that point. That's how we get that information dump that Jack got sick and science couldn't help him. That math is supposed to make order from chaos, but the dad, who was a mathematician, just brought darkness into the world that had existed since before the universe.
I mean, it's not the first idea to link like really advanced mathematical concepts.
Sure.
So, okay. Here's what I want you to consider.
Brian does the research.
You've heard the arguments about aliens being demons and demons being aliens, right? And the idea that obviously there will be something to do with math that allows us to finally access communication with aliens, whether it's us or somebody from another place or whatever. So the idea that it's being used to access communication with quote-unquote demons really isn't that much of a stretch. Just saying.
Okay. I mean, I guess that makes sense, but do you think that that's what this movie was saying?
Nope.
Yeah. So Brian, like I said, gets into doing his own research, and he eventually he drags a triangle from each of the Hebrew glyphs to a pentagon shape, creating a pentagram. This great little digital rendering that he somehow created.
I thought he found this stuff on his wife's computer.
Is that what it was? I don't know if he was. I at that point, listen, I already told you I quit the show and I smashed my computer. So I was watching this on my phone.
That was an expensive computer. That was a bad choice.
This movie was bad. I did a little bit of diving into the pentagram as a symbol and I guess this specific one. So this was first seen. French occultist wrote a book called The Key of Black Magic in 1897. And that included the Hebrew glyphs as well as a couple of things that were eventually removed when Anton LaVey incorporated
that. I was just
going to
say. Yeah, all right.
Into the logo for the, is it Church of Satan? I want to get that right, but I also don't care. Anton would appreciate that. It just another piece of this puzzle that didn't quite fit, but was forced into place. That's all. That's all.
And I guess more importantly, it was a spooky idea and the glow-in-the-dark paint was cool.
Okay.
And everything until the mother entered wherever was at the bottom of the stairs.
Yeah.
It was really a fun flick.
Yeah, we're going to
let them
enjoy that.
And then it went off the rails.
If they want to
and you go
that.
Enjoy that on your own.
That's something else.
And I want to hear from everyone.
Okay.
How you would have written the third act. I want alternate endings from our listeners.
Someone write a different ending, because
I'm gonna Malcolm Gladwell this, and I'm gonna write a different conclusion, just like he and his friends did for Little Mermaid.
Well, in conclusion, Kelly, what would you give this thing?
Despite Byron's really valiant efforts to make me hate this movie, I still truly kind of like it, and I'm going to give The Cellar, just based on unique ideas that were presented well to start, some really good shots and some fun vehicles for horror that I haven't seen used before. Mm. The Cellar is worthy of 6.1 unit circles.
Oh, no.
You're going to give it like a 3, aren't you?
Kelly, this is Blumhouse Light. Yeah, things look good enough, and I mentioned earlier that kind of creaky, creeping string score plus the moaning is kind of cool. That's kind of fun. There's a chance.
Oh my God.
We didn't really mention the family chemistry is just like poor. There's really nothing that leads you to believe that the husband and wife are a loving couple, or that they care at all about their kids, or that the kids care about their parents.
Okay.
The entire situation lacked context sufficient enough for me to care. And then they throw in this baffling concept attempting to make it seem like a really smart film. And I normally am. I'm very insecure when I feel like I don't understand something. Like, it must be me. But I've seen this twice, and I've mentioned the what's going on over there.
Sorry, my phone or my iPad just started playing a video of photos of Pukwudgie. I apologize.
Are you sure that you just didn't need that because of the brutal takedown I'm attempting on this?
I mean,
film?
I am trying to zone out from it. I'm not gonna lie.
I am not the one wrong in this situation. I shouldn't feel insecure. This is a confusing movie, and you know, I often say that some of these films would make better shorts, but in this case, kind of like with Lights Out, I think that it should have stayed short. Or should have stayed whatever version the 10 steps was. Or they could just scrap that ambitious third act and end with something a little bit more, I guess, standard, you know? I would have gone for something a little bit more direct in the end after having this very complex situation, you know? But we didn't talk about the third act, so I'm not going to talk more about that. I give the seller...
No more third act.
Nope. 3.9 SIM cards that work in purgatory?
Okay, whatever.
And those are our thoughts on The Cellar, which is available now on VOD. So why don't you, I think it might actually be on Shudder too. Check it out. And once you have, let us know what you think. You can reach out to us on social media at Fright Day on Twitter and Instagram. Email us contact@frightday.com or leave a comment below this episode in the show notes at frightday.com. We can have a big discussion about it in our Facebook group, facebook.com/group/frightday, or in the Discord server, discord.frightday.com.
Yep.
Yeah, wow. Next week, I'm really excited because we're covering one of
the
first...
We're going to the World's Fair.
We're all doing it. And that's like one of my most anticipated films of the year. So hopefully you don't do what I did to The Cellar when we cover that. But Kelly, until then, where are you going to be?
I'm going to be on Twitter. Kelly Fright Day.
I didn't let you talk. Are you excited about the World's Fair?
I actually am. Despite the fact that I was utterly confused for a very long time about it, because you kept saying that, and I was like, what do you mean the World's Fair?
Why is there a World's Fair? Are we doing it?
It was just so confusing to me. Yeah. But now, I'm very excited about it.
Well, good. I'm excited as well. You know, we're going to be barreling towards the conclusion of your Montauk Project series as well pretty soon here.
Well, we're going to be drifting slowly in the direction
I think we could. I mean, we've got a current. We've got to kind of follow the white waters of conspiracy, Kelly.
Oh, okay.
But until then, Kelly, where are you going to be?
Yeah, I'm going to be at Kelly Fright Day on Twitter. I'm also going to be on Discord punishing certain individuals who ruined my March Madness choices. Not going to name names, Jacob, but you murdered Sputnik and Come True, so I hate you forever.
Yeah.
Then you can email me, kelly@frightday.com, if you'd like to send me a true story for True Tales of Terror, or if you would like to send me a rewritten third act to The Cellar.
That's a great idea. And I'm at Byron McCoy on Twitter and Instagram. Byron@frightday.com is my email address. And until next Friday, where we're talking Montauk, I'm Byron.
I'm Kelly.
Stick to long division.
Stay away from radiant mode.
You're a fucking dork, you know that?
I know, and I like being a dork.
Been listening to an Audio Wool original produced by Byron McCoy. Theme music provided by Cemeteries. For more programs like this, visit audiowool.co.